All right, hello. My name is Julian Edwards. Today is February 23rd, 2020, and I'm interviewing Ashley Rain.
Ashley Rain
at Fento Library for the Oral History Project for Dr. Rosenthal's LGBTQ plus storytelling class at Roanoke College. So first off, I just want to start by asking you like early life questions such as, where did you grow up and how'd you like it there?
I grew up in Roanoke. I was here born and raised, Roanoke, Virginia. I grew up in the northwest area of Roanoke. I know y'all are here for college and things like that, but off of Hirschberger, Lafayette, maybe a little behind, if we're coming towards the mall, behind the mall area and things like that. So I grew up there. I enjoyed growing up in the northwest neighborhood. It was kind of all I knew growing up. I thought Roanoke was just all of that. We would venture out to Salem and Benton and things like that, but Roanoke was, that inner city was kind of all I knew growing up. We, down from riding bicycles to skating up and down the street to basketball games, it all happened. But I lived on Coldland Drive.
So you like sports growing up?
I like sports growing up. I was a sports girl before anything growing up. I think I grew up with a family of girls, most likely, mostly, but my dad, he was in the sports, he was basketball, a lot of guys on my streets and things like that, that I would just kind of, I wanted to do what they were doing. I wanted to play basketball.
So talk to me more about like your family demographic. How is that?
Family? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. What do you mean family demographic?
I say, pretty much what y'all do for fun.
Okay, what do we do for fun?
Yeah, how did you do for fun? Let's start with that.
What do we do for fun? My family, my mom is from New Jersey, so we would travel back and forth to New Jersey a lot. So we did do a little traveling growing up. We spent every year, every summer going to Florida, and we would go to Disney World, but things like that were big trips and things like that that we did for fun. But around town, for a while, my mom, she was heavily into the church, so we went to church Sundays, Wednesdays, and any other days in between that she felt that she needed to be in church and that she had to serve. My sister, we would run off to the movies and things like that a lot of times. We visited, one of the things that I really remember is with growing up in such a close-knit, community, everybody knew each other on the block. So if Toya down the street was getting in trouble for something, pretty much we were getting in trouble for something too, because we had everything to do with it. So it was, everybody's parents could correct us and things like that. So it was different, but it was all I knew. Yes, you say.
Okay. So in terms of like your sexuality, were they accepting when you came out?
No, I don't believe they would. I don't believe personally they would have been accepting of my sexuality. It wasn't something that was necessarily talked about in our communities. I knew people, choir directors and people like that who in the community were gay and in the church, but we never really discussed it. It was just something that we didn't really talk about. So I knew that when I had had an attraction to women, I just kind of knew that that wasn't something that was going to be easy to bring up. It wasn't just something I could say over dinner or anything like that. It was something that took a lot of thought, and just feeling out how family members really felt about different things. But as I have grown up, they have become more accepting, and I think as time has changed and a lot more, I guess, people are willing to be more open, I guess you can say, and that confidence, I guess, they have become more accepting, I guess, in certain ways.
Okay. Did you verbally express these feelings to your family, or did they find out on their own, or how did they go about?
Let's see. I verbally expressed it to my mother, but it was also at a time where I felt like I didn't have a choice. It was a lot going on with a best friend of mine, and the family wanted to know what was going on, and it was just like, okay, well, you wanted to know this was going on. We're gonna spell it out. And my mom, after that story kind of came out of what me and my best friend had kind of fell out over, we were fighting, it was mostly I didn't say I had a girlfriend or something like that. Two people wanting to make more out of a friendship than it really should be, I guess you can say. And I think that was the early stages of not really knowing who to talk to or who to express these feelings to. So I guess if that answers it a little bit, but they after that, I will say it was refreshing to come out, to not have to hold that secret in anymore. But after that, it was also my mom. She was heavily into the church, and I received a lot of letters that were written from her and books from Joyce Myers to T.D. Jakes and things like that. And I'm just like, I don't need a book.
Yes. How would you say you respond to, like, getting these letters and these books and everything?
I was very passive. I didn't feel like that I could really approach or say anything to my mom about, like, that I don't think this is a phase, you know, or this is not something you grow out of or that needs to be prayed out of. I don't think I had the confidence then to say that, or even that I knew to say that, or even that I think it was also, it was just something that I knew that was in me. This attraction was in me. I enjoyed it. I was just like, I wasn't something that I was afraid of. I didn't really know how to defend that. I didn't have anything to support it. I didn't have any really experience with anybody else who had really been through it. For me personally to say, hey, can you help me with this, or how can I navigate this? It was kind of just something that I internalized, I guess you can say, that I kept it with me and just like, oh, yeah. This is who I, almost kind of just creating another personality. This is who I am with my mother. She thinks I am this way. And that was kind of detrimental as well, because you start to live life for another person when that's not truly who you are. And you have to be another person and secret and hide. And so I always, in a sense, feel like I'm continuously coming out of the closet, if that makes sense.
So do you think the people in your family tried to understand, like, who you're becoming or who you were?
I think that as I become more confident and they see that this isn't a phase, I think that they firsthand can, I guess, identify or be more empathetic or sympathetic, I guess you could say, to being more open-minded to who I am and how I live my life. But I will say that over the years that they have been more accepting. My mom, we have way better conversations. She doesn't think I just like anybody who walks by. it's a lot of fun. It's hard. Some things I don't want to break down and talk to my mom about are just, I'm just like, Rita, it's just it is what it is. And I say that just because I want to be respectful of a sense that because I am who I am doesn't mean that what you believe isn't true to you. So I guess we try not to cross those boundaries and be respectful of each other. I'm not trying to persuade her that this is right for her, but it's right for me. And if her beliefs tell her differently, then that's fine if that's the way you want to believe. But I've learned to believe differently, yes.
They're being open-minded.
Yeah.
You talk about being like a religious family. How did that play a role in your upbringing?
I remember getting into church maybe around 11 or 12. I remember my dad's not heavily into the church. My mom and my dad aren't married. They were together for 20 years, never married. We lived with my mom, but we always knew who my dad was. He was a great provider. We never wanted for anything. I had two great parents who took care of me. We just didn't live together or anything like that. So my dad, he was raised, his mom married a pastor. So he was raised as mostly as a pastor's kid in the church and things like that. And my mom, she was raised as well, not a pastor's kid, but her mom was heavily into the church. And for a while, we didn't go to church. That wasn't a regular thing until, like I said, I was 12 years old, 11 or 12 years old around that time. So before then, we did what we wanted to do. It was Friday nights at the skating rink, Saturday nights at the skating rink, 7 to 7, doing those type of things. And so it changed our whole lifestyles. My sister and I, we didn't know what to do. Like, we didn't have to get up for church on Sunday to be there at 10 o'clock in the morning, and we have a whole house full of people. For a while, my cousins lived with us from Jersey. So it was different, but I accepted it. I enjoyed the fellowship of church. I enjoyed the praise and worship of church. I still think that's even one of my center places of where I find peace and just how music can penetrate you and, you know, heal you. And music is a gift. So I will say it definitely sticks with me in a lot of ways. And I have to unlearn a lot of things that I learned in the church because it doesn't apply to everyone else out there, and to be respectful of how they live their lives and the people that they are. But I will say it definitely shaped me even into being confident and into coming out. One of my friends asked me recently, do people see me as someone, you know, a Christian, someone who goes to church and things like that? And I'm saying, I think they do, but I don't know why it has to be separate. I guess I can be gay, I can date women, I can go to church, I can do this, that. So that's hard here in Roanoke, because I will say, because it's I accept it, but not all people in my community, black people in my community, accept me into the church. So I don't always feel comfortable going to church now. But I will say that it is a big part of my life. It changed at a critical time, 12 to 18 or so memorable years of my life. So yes, I do think it definitely changed.
So I want to talk to you about school. So in elementary school, how'd that go off? Like, when did you feel like you were pretty much, how do I say this? Like attracted to the same gender, pretty much.
Okay. It was, I guess it wasn't elementary school. I want to say I didn't necessarily have it in my mind in elementary school. I knew personally, I think it's a funny story. I knew personally around that initial step out of middle school that initial step out of elementary school, it was definitely that first step into middle school. I dated a guy, we had Dominique Johnson, and he was great. We both played sports and things like that. But for me, I was attracted to his mother. And it was every time she answered the phone, or I knew that, you know, we celebrated and exchanged gifts and things like that. It was the fact that I knew she was picking it out. Down to her, I liked her car. It was more of a sense of, like, Ashley, you know, this may be a little more than just, oh, I just like this person, or I want to be friends with this person. So for me, it was knowing that I was friends with this person here, but I was heavily attracted to his mother. And as I went on in different areas in my life, I think I realized how I was attracted to women. And most like it was, I think, my sister's cheerleading coach, who was a little older and established, and that was what she wanted to do in life. I don't want to say it was women who were doing things, but it was women. That's where I was inspired, or I guess I felt the most inspired around. So I feel like that was for me in middle school, and I didn't necessarily know what to do with that. I just continued to date them. This is what you were supposed to do. I didn't know any of my friends that I could tell that, hey, I think I like his mother, or there wasn't any, I guess, girls who were in my school that I necessarily liked. So I didn't really know how to explain to people, this is what's going on with me. And I thought people thought I would be crazy. Like, oh, this girl actually is crazy. Like, don't talk to her. But so that's how it was for me. And I think after I learned to fully accept that, it took a while. It took all throughout, mostly high school. I dated my first girlfriend probably my 11th grade year. But like I said, I knew back from 6th grade that this is what I wanted to do. So when one of the, I believe in middle school, it was a girl, Tempest, and she was out and open, but I didn't know how to be that way. I kind of envied her in a sense. And you know, she would come and talk to me, and sometimes I didn't know how to talk to her because I'm like, I'm not trying to shy away from you, but I'm also don't know how to open up, but I don't know how to share this with you. And also I know of the backlash. I knew people who talked about her as well. I knew people who just, you know, were friends with her, but would, you know, laugh about it in the background. So that kind of stopped me as well. Now I can, like, you know, thank you, Tempest. Like, you were a light at that time. I didn't know you would be, but yeah, so that was even kind of hard for me. I knew it wasn't easy on her end, and she was out and she was open about it, and I knew what other people said in the background. And I knew also, I guess, like I said, in the Black church and the Black community, the things that weren't said just for no reason, I guess you could say.
Yeah, so tell me more about your peers' responses to how you feel.
One of my friends, when I was in 11th grade, she asked me, she realized I was hanging out with someone a lot more. I remember my friend Natasha Ritchie, and she realized that I was hanging out with this girl Ashley a lot more, and she came up to me and asked me, she was like, hey, are you dating Ashley? And I was just like, no, we weren't dating, we were actually just friends. But that kind of gave me, I did actually tell her, well, I am dating someone from another school and that they are a girl. So for me, that was like the first time of like, she asked, I'm gonna just see how it goes out there. And she was just like, all right, I just thought y'all spend a lot of time together. Like, I just thought I would ask, and I feel like that really helped me a lot. One of my best friends, Mashika, who lived right beside me, she's just like, oh yeah, I was just waiting for you to tell me, or waiting for you to feel comfortable and things like that. So a lot of my friends, they responded well, but I think it was something that I didn't know how to fully say, so I kind of let them find out about it. And if they were okay with it, that was fine. And I had nobody never talk to me again, per se. But it wasn't something that I felt comfortable with fully coming out and saying. I think I lived in Georgia for a little while, and it was, so that was also kind of easier for me. I left my senior year of high school, and so I was able to just be a new person in Georgia, and that was kind of helpful. I didn't know anybody, so I could identify how I wanted to, and nobody would necessarily question it or know my background, or that I dated Dominic Johnson in 6th, 7th grade. You know, nobody would know that. So that kind of made it a lot easier. Seeing a lot more brown faces who look like me in the community, living in Atlanta and things like that. That kind of helped with it. But I will say my peers were pretty open. I think not all of them kind of knew what to say or what I was going through, but I think as times have changed, and I think that they have become more accepting and knowing that, you know, everybody lives the life the way that they want, and love is love, and that if it doesn't matter who you go to bed with or spend your time with, that we're friends, and that's what matters to most of me, we're friends, and that's what's kind of got me through a lot of it.
So you feel like people are just happy that you're happy rather than...
Happy that I'm happy. And I think it's mostly of getting over that fear or that notion of even thinking that people are still so homophobic or closed-minded. And I know that is true and very open in the world, but it is slowly progressing and opening up in the Black community and in family. And the biggest part is that somehow learning or finding a way to talk about it. Until I was really able to tell my mom, like, that it really hurt my feelings, that it wasn't fully true, and here we are 10 years later, and I still had those letters in my head. So being able to talk about it and just being able to understand that everything changes, we evolve, and we may not have all the right answers now or know, but it's about being in good spaces with each other and being able to respect how one another lives their life.
Yeah, so you told me how your mother responded to stuff. Can you talk about how your father responded to it?
My father, I don't want to say, I don't know if I really came out to my father. I know he knows. I think he maybe asked around to my sister or a couple of my cousins, and they told me, and they just like, you know, it's something you need to talk to Ashley about. I think that it's kind of something within our relationship that I think it's kind of just unspoken, that we haven't really had to discuss it. And that's kind of helpful for me as well. He's met every one of my girlfriends. He's celebrated every one of my birthdays with them and things like that. He's more respectful than my mom would be in most situations, with things. So I don't think it's necessarily something I had to come out and tell him. I think it's something that we just kind of understood about when he understood about me and he accepted it about me. And I think that's been a big helping and stepping stone with that. And especially as I grow up and I realize that I'm a lot more like my dad than I thought I was, looks wise, personality wise, things like that, that we have a lot of common things. And I think that I lived with him for a long while with just me and him. And I think being able to spend that time with one another, it kind of became a question or something that didn't really need to be discussed. He doesn't ask me when I'm having kids or when I'm getting married or when I'm going to meet the right guy, or he's never questioned when I went on a date with a guy or when I went on a date with a girl. I'm just like, yeah, I'll be back later. He's just always been open, and he's just like, okay, all right, see you later, have fun, let me know if you need anything. So I think that part with my dad, it was a lot easier than my mother's response. And I feel like even still my mother carries a response even 10 years later. She's not as friendly to my girlfriend, and I know why, because she doesn't respect or accept the way I live my life. She thinks what I'm doing is wrong, and she can't help but project that. But also, She's not a perfect person. She, in her beliefs, she's afraid for me in a sense. And so in a sense, I can respect that. I can understand that. But also we have to talk about, like, no, Mom. We're still going to be respectful. We're still going to be polite. We're still going to be courteous, because even beliefs or not, we treat everybody with kindness. So.
Okay, so you think your dad kind of was before his time, pretty much?
Yeah. Yeah, before his time, he's definitely, I would say, before his time. And he's chill, he's easygoing, nothing really gets to him. And I feel like just more of understanding, he's more open. He's not caught up with the ways of life or society or the way that we should live our lives. And he's just kind of his own man and wants to do his own thing. He's retired and he likes to watch his sports. Have a drink every now and then, and exercise, that makes him happy. So I think that chillness, that levelness of him, has helped me with, I guess, coming out or being out with him, because he knows it's just not something that we have had to verbally say.
Just lets you do you, pretty much.
Yeah.
So going back to when you moved to Atlanta, so that was pretty much a way for you to reinvent yourself, start over again.
Yes.
How'd that feel, not being in that, like, social island that you were in high school?
It was freeing. Even in the sense of high school, of being here in Roanoke, small town, still can be cliquish and just anywhere, still wanting to fit in certain crowds. I could really choose where I wanted to go. I could really sit back and look at, you know, the lunchroom and be like, okay, this is who I would like to share my time with. And I was able to share my time with a lot of people. I didn't necessarily know everybody in certain areas or feel like I had to be a part of certain situations because I lived here or I grew up in this neighborhood, or I identified this way even. So it was freeing. I met so many different people, so many different nationalities. It was definitely different from growing up and going to Fleming. And actually, I graduated from South Gwinnett in Georgia. It was different. I guess you could say it was definitely different going to a different school, and especially coming in on your senior year. That was very hard, meeting people. But I moved with one of my best friends, so she kind of introduced me to people. But with really being able to reinvent myself, it was, I think, my best friend, I didn't necessarily like the name of Bisexual Barbie, but that's kind of how she introduced me at sometimes. But it gave me kind of range to just see how people responded to it. And I was able to be my own person. I didn't have to sugarcoat anything. I didn't have to look over my shoulder and see if someone from fifth grade was seeing me kiss this girl, and to, you know, go back and tell everybody about it. So I will say it was freeing, and it definitely boosted my confidence, gave me a boost in confidence. I definitely, without living in Atlanta, definitely helped me be more out and open here in Roanoke, I guess you could say. Sure.
That's good. So you going out, like, what did you do for social gathering, having fun on the weekends, doing your thing? What do you usually do?
Okay, so I host a poetry show called The Speakeasy on 11th Street. And we actually just had a show on Friday night. And it was called Black As I Am. And we shared black stories on 11th Street, right in the Melrose neighborhood where my dad lived, still in the Northwest neighborhood, but right where my dad lived and where I spent a lot of time. So I like poetry shows. I like anything with lounges and music. I'm not too much of a party person, so you won't find me at a club. I'm usually asleep by 11. So I'm not a big drinker or anything like that. So I like spaces where we can actually talk, fellowship, and actually share space. It can be games. It can be drinks there. I'll have a drink. I just don't drink excessively. I like close-knit gatherings. Anything to do. I love family. And my family is kind of huge. We celebrate birthdays a lot. So that's once a month we'll be out at a restaurant, about 25 of us. So that's something that we do for family. But as for just with myself, with social gatherings, it's mostly poetry shows, live music. I like anything. I'm always on one of the campuses at a poetry reading or when a lecture comes and things like that. So I like things like that. Anything that's stimulating. Not too many parties, things like that. With social gatherings, just something chill, relaxing for me, where we can actually conversate, have some records playing in the back or something like that. I just like a chill atmosphere.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense to me. So, how would you say these speakeasies and poetry and things like this, like, define who you are?
I believe with doing this work, I am becoming everything I imagine Ashley could be growing up. I guess in my own little head, I had this picture painted of who Ashley was, of who the real Ashley was, and not who I had to show to people and things like that. So with actually breaking out and getting into poetry and things like that, it makes me feel like I'm becoming the person that I truly desire to be. And I think that definitely matters because we, not even just because of my sexuality and how I choose to identify, but just work and everything in life right now that takes the things that we are truly passionate about and happy for away from us. I think that we just really have to focus on the things that matter, I guess.
That's good. So how do you think this poetry affects others, and do you use it to affect others?
I use it to affect others, but also because where y'all are here in Roanoke, there's not too much to do outside of, you know, either going to a club or going to a bar downtown and things like that. I wanted to create space for other creatives. I wanted to create space for other people who didn't necessarily want to go to the club, or I like the hookah lounge, I'll go there, but even that turns into like a little club after 11 o'clock or so. It's a little too crowded. So I think that I wanted to create a safe space for people to come out and have good fun. Mm-hmm. And what I like about the speakeasy is I'm 29. We had it 21 and up for obvious reasons, but we'll have everyone of every age group in there, and from grandma to uncle to sister to little brother to little cousin. And I think I have loved that the most about it, that we can get so many people and that we can be on one accord and one page. And that there's no drama, that there's no issues, and that we can still relate and share our stories with one another, no matter. There's no age, in the sense, there's no age gap there. Even though we're all different ages, there's no age gap there. I like that. I like that we get to do it on 11th Street. I actually do it at I collaborate with Xavier Duckett, who's with the Humble Hustle. But in the space he's in, that used to be a video shop, and my family used to own it. So I love even being in that space there. So it's so significant to me to actually be there and to be able to bring Black events, Black stories and things back to Roanoke, because especially in Roanoke, and I don't know how much we know about the Gainesboro area and things like that. It's not too far from the Gainesboro area, right in Melrose, but that was a thriving community. It was over, I don't want to say the wrong number, but over, I'll say 60, I think it's 70, over 70 Black-owned businesses. They had a club, they had an ice cream parlor, they had disco spots, they had TV shops, they had the Tribune and things like that. So I love downtown and things like that, but there were so many other communities that were thriving, and those buildings are still there. So why not still use them? Why not still reach out to those communities, especially those communities where people just drive around to get downtown? But people live there. People enjoy their lives there. And so my goal is to, even though we are on 11th Street and a lot of people are coming from Northwest or Cave Spring or wherever they may be coming from because they have heard of the event, I want people on 11th Street or in Melrose to be able to walk down the street or to drive by and be like, what's going on over there? And they show up next time. And they be able to, I'm going down on 11th Street and I'm able to just walk out of my house and trickling down the block, and here we are having live music, jazz, and poetry and storytelling going on. I think after the show, it even went into a cipher. So I think it feels the community in so many different ways. I just love that I know so many artists in this community to be able to put it on and to show people that there's great things going on in Roanoke with people who are Black and brown.
Mm-hmm. So you feel like they were really welcoming to you when you first started?
Mm-hmm. Yes, very welcoming. I will say I started with the Speakeasy on 11th. It was a collaboration thing. I went to, with Xavier Duckett, we traveled up to Norfolk, went to an art show, all type of arts, down to culinary arts, body paint, live canvas painting while we were there, and we were like, this would be really dope to bring back to our city. Like, I've been a poet for a few years. I've met a couple of artists. I started out with Soul Sessions. It's a poetry group downtown hosted by Harvest Black, and they're every other Wednesday. And I started out there, so I was able to meet and connect with different people. The only different thing for me was I knew that we could reach the Black community. And I feel like nobody wanted to reach the Black, not saying nobody wanted to reach the Black community, but nobody wanted to say, I wanted to have Black events. I want to have Black events in the Black neighborhood, and I want everybody to feel like they can come. I want everybody. I want a white person from Cave Spring or the Grandin area to come over to Melrose, where it's talked less about, I guess, in certain areas because of different things that are going on in the community. I want them to feel comfortable coming over here, hearing these stories, and even eventually sharing their own, because it all matters. It all ties in, and I think creating that space to see that actually come to life, it's been dope. It's been amazing.
It's fantastic. Was there like a spotlight on you for being an African American, also have being part of the LGBTQ community when you started doing all of this? Are you a beacon? Do you feel like a beacon for those who feel underrepresented?
At times I can feel like a beacon. Sorry. And I also felt like at one point I had to realize that I just kind of had to embrace it, because I also felt like I kind of had to separate it. I could be a poet here, but I couldn't identify. I think personally, I didn't feel like that I could identify the LGBTQ spectrum as well. In Roanoke, in this community where my whole family lives, where where this is just everything that I have known. So I do think for a while that that there was a spotlight on me, but I think I kind of thought that why not take advantage of it? Why not really share my stories? Because the LGBT community, especially in the Black community, it's slim to none. I don't know anywhere where we can necessarily feel safe, and we're working on that. We're working on getting things together where we can have dinners and things like that, and we could work on things and talk about and share our stories. But yes, I felt like for a while I felt like I had to be a beacon, but also I personally felt like I had to separate it. And then I think that's way too much for my anxiety and just my life in general. And even in the sense, I was tired of separating myself. I was tired of having to be one way here and one way there. So I think with being able to just be able to embrace it, even I take steps every day. It's a process. I take steps every day. It was just last Tuesday I was doing a reading at the Franklin County Library, and my mom was there, and I'm looking around, and it's just like, oh, am I going to do this poem, or am I going to save it? And if I would have saved it, it would have been because my mom was there. I know she doesn't necessarily agree with how I believe, and I don't know if I could say these things in front of her. But I did the poem anyway, and that was even my first step of being able to embrace myself. Mm-hmm. And my mom, she didn't say anything. She said I did a great job, and I know she may have still felt, or not even that she had felt something like that, just there in that moment that she respected me as the poet and the person that I was, and that was helpful. So it's always a process, but I do at times feel like I have had to be that beacon. But I hope that more people step up. I hope that me being able to share my story and how I grew up will inspire somebody else to share theirs, because we all need to know. I know we all, it's too many of us. I know you. I see you around town. So I know that I know that there's a story there in timing. But I believe that as we tell our stories, that it will be better for the young girls or young people coming behind us to be able to be open about who they are as people.
That's fantastic. And also uses it's a way of getting respect for those who aren't aware of what you go through. Mm-hmm. So can you tell me things relative to other people who are doing interviews, mm-hmm. you're one of the youngest people here.
Okay.
So can you tell us more about how the internet played a role in your pretty much your life?
The internet still plays a major role. I think that I remember our first computer, we ran to the store. I remember it was over where the Advance Auto is now. I think it was called Circuit City. Circuit City, we ran over to Circuit City. It was still dial-up. I didn't know internet was going to open us up the way it did there. I didn't know it was going to open us up the way it did there, but it also gave... it created a space where people could be other people. People could really say how they were truly feeling without being aware of other people's situations or the full stories on the other side. So I think the internet. I think the internet, for me, I won't say it wasn't as helpful as I would like for it to be. And especially now in 2020, it's not 2020. Now in 2020, we have it's a great tool because we're able to have so many interviews. We're able to read so many different articles, and that has opened me up. That with definitely internet and social media. I love being able to read someone else's story, have their whole background and things like that. So I do like it in that instance, but I also think that it's a horrible place for everyone to fully speak their minds. And I think that we forget that we get behind a computer and we forget that we're actually people, that, no, words do hurt, mm-hmm. Sticks and bones, but no, words do hurt, and that the biggest thing is we stick with the things that people say to us, whether it was true or not, with their tone, with the words they chose and how they said it. So I think that the internet is not wasn't the best way for us, for people to fully express themselves, just with the backlash that we would, that you didn't know that was possible of coming, I guess you can say. But now I think that it creates a platform where, and I still think that with the platform it creates, I think that it's up for us to still create that safe space for it. And I think that, I think the internet is helpful. I think that it hasn't always, you know, gave us, you know, it's, you know, positivity and things like that, but that's with everything. And we have to take the good with the bad. But I do think that in the long run, especially with the internet and the age we are in now, that the internet is everything. That how we share our stories, that how we go to do research and things like that, it's like how we are, we're doing this interview now. We are going to be able to keep this. We are going to be, because of the internet and things like that, that it's always going to be around. And I think that that's what matters, because so much of our history is erased with moves, with fires, with things that just magically happen. And because I think the internet is going to keep the stories that matter at the forefront, that you're not going to be able to forget about it. It's all, you're just going to be able to type into the search bar and you're going to be able to look it up and read it and be inspired by that. So I think it's had its downfalls, and it definitely has caused a lot of tragedy in the LGBTQ community. But I do think that we still have the right and the access to turn that around and make it work for our good as well. Yeah. So just, if it didn't work, it didn't work necessarily in one area, but it's going to work in another. And even though that we are being attacked in certain ways, that we're going to attack back with the same vices that they use.
Yeah, because oftentimes you see groups of people coming in to hate another group that's trying to succeed. Do you think that's more common now than it was before?
No. I don't think it's more common now than it was before. I think that we just have phones and social media to actually record it. And that, I guess in a sense, that sadly, because it is recorded, that more people will believe it, in a sense. But I think, I definitely think that it's not more. Not more now. I will say that it's all hate crimes and things like that. It's definitely has always been happening. It's just that the internet, phones, and social media, it makes it very hard to sweep it under the rug, especially when it's out there before you can create a story behind it. The news, like, you know, you can only, you have to read between the lines and things. So I think that definitely not more. It's just we're able to see it more.
That's true. About hate crimes, have you ever experienced any sort of, like, discrimination, hate based off either, like, your race or your sexuality or things like that? Either from, like, sent from the internet or anything else, or even in school? Anything.
With sexuality, I don't want to say... I want to say... not that I was aware of at the time. I want to say not that I was aware of at the time. But with... let's see. With my race, I will say the first time I realized I was black was after Trayvon Martin and Eric Garner and things like that going. But for me, it was, I was rounding the corner and a cop came out of a banker, and I just, in that moment, I immediately knew who I was. I immediately knew that I was black. He didn't do anything to me. He didn't say anything to me, but I just automatically knew. But besides for, you know, being called a nigger in traffic, I want to say it's hard for me because I've always to identify with or feel like that I have been discriminated against or things like that. I don't want to say definitely say I have when I didn't, but I want to say it was hard for me to identify because I've always just loved anybody. And in certain instances, I've had to, like, you know what, that they didn't have my best interests in heart, but I didn't see it that way at first. And I don't want to say it was because I went to a mixed congregation church. I went to Valley Word Ministries growing up, but I knew good white people. I knew good people and things like that in general. So it was hard for I will say I didn't necessarily have to go out and face racism and things like that at the forefront until I was of age of 18 or of older. And I think the biggest thing now is even living in Southwest Virginia, working in Southwest Virginia, and working, even at times working for the government, and how they, I guess, treat our children or people of color differently. And I do know that for sure, because I have worked in the same organization, just at different locations, and it differs, depends on the zip code and how I handle everything. And that's one of the reasons why I stepped away from the city and the government, because it's hard to know that's how it's going down and still to be there. So I guess you can say in those instances if that explains.
Yeah, okay. I understand. Based off of pretty much, do you think we're getting better when it comes like to acceptance of other people's cultures, identity, and everything since when you were younger?
I believe we are getting better. I believe we are getting better, and I will say that for me personally, just from stepping outside of Black communities and Black culture, that it's okay to experience and it's okay to experience and learn of other cultures. And I think we're getting better. We're reading more books, we're traveling more, we're getting out in nature more and things like that. So I definitely think we are doing better. We have a lot of ways to go, and as we all have work to do and our work and our progress, but I do think that we are getting better. And I think that, but I also think it's, if we're not getting better, it's, if we're not getting better as a whole, I think that we'll have to even break it down into individual case by case, because everything starts with one person, that our destiny and this journey is all connected into one another. So my being good to the world is helping your being good to the world. So I believe that it's an individual case by case, but as a people, we are getting back to ourselves and our own thoughts, and we are getting better. So,
do you believe that you still have some things to learn?
Yes, I have so many things to learn. Even with a lot within the LGBT communities and the spectrum and things like that, I will say also, because I didn't learn a lot of the terms or even anything until I went to college myself. So I had to get out of my community to even realize how other people were addressing things and how that is just different in other places. That, you know, everybody doesn't live in small Southwest Virginia in a small town in Roanoke. So definitely, I'm learning every day. I'm learning every day. It's always a process, and I think that as I even grow as a person and I identify with myself, it's changing, and I have to do my own research. So I have to go talk to people, that I have to, you know, get into therapy, yeah, to talk about it, to actually process what it is, because we can feel it on the forefront, but I think, as we said, in the Black community, we don't talk about a lot of things, so we actually talk about it, not internalize it per se, but actually talk about it, and with being able to talk about it, we're able to learn and move on from that and get over the next step, because if we can't move forward, we're just going to stay backwards. So
I do believe like your poetry work is a way of like not internalizing some of these issues that people often do, like it's an outlet.
Yes. Yes, my poetry is definitely an outlet. I don't know where I would be without it. Definitely with speaking my truths. We did a Love is Love event, and even with creating spaces like that, it was, I knew certain questions would be for me at this event, but I knew that we would have to answer questions, and it felt good to identify. It felt good to be open and in exactly who I was and say how, you know, love is different for different people in the community, that I think about taking my girlfriend's hand downtown a little more than someone else may. But, so yes, I think that may answer,
That works for me.
Okay.
Okay, so let's talk about, like, significant events that occurred, like, during your upbringing. So, gay marriage legalizing, how did that play a role in your life?
You know, it was, for me, honestly, it wasn't a huge deal for me, because, like I said, it was something in our community that we didn't really talk about. So it was something that we, in a sense, that just, in a condition to think that we wouldn't get that far in the first place. Or even to think that, for me, with the way I was raised and my religious beliefs, that even though that this is, you know, gay marriage and being legalized and everything and things like that, I didn't necessarily feel like that it was something still that I could do anyway. So it wasn't, it didn't, to me, it didn't apply to me. Now, I think I'm becoming more open into it, and that's as I am approaching 3 years in a partnership and just thinking about those type of things. And I think so until now, it really hasn't really played a part in my life. I guess it took time to fully accept myself and to separate myself from my religious beliefs and take a more spiritual approach. Mm-hmm. So excited for it. I was excited for it, supported all my other friends. My friends were happy and things like that. And a lot of people immediately started getting married and things like that. But for me, it was something that I seen, and I'm like, oh, that's dope. That's great. That's a great stride for history, and it's great steps moving forward. But where I was at the time, it was still just wasn't something that I felt like that I could do.
Mm-hmm. So less politics, more like personal feelings, stuff like that.
Yes, it was more of a personal thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so a lot of people often talk about assimilation into, like, white society or in heteronormative society. Okay. How did you fit into that? Do you feel like you went against the norm at some point, or would you feel like you had to assimilate to, like, conform to be more accepted?
Yeah, I feel like in ways I had to conform to be more accepted, that I had to, I guess in the back of your mind, that you have to make up for the things that you know that they aren't going to like about you, or that things that they consider to be flaws. So that, almost in the sense that I had to project more of myself and show a little bit less of this. So yes, I feel like in ways to adapt, bend, squirm, wherever you could fit in to get there. So yes, I do feel like that in certain ways that I had to adapt or to conform to certain situations. Mm.
Do you feel like you had a harder time than other people, or do you had a better time conforming than other people in your community?
I think I had an easier time performing. Easygoing. Growing up, I always kind of cared what other people thought and things like that, so it was easy to kind of just fall into that line and do what was needed to do to fit in and be safe, in a sense.
Okay. That's good. So, you feel like you and your peers are more open with who you truly are now than who you were maybe, like, in the past?
Yes. And we'll say I had to also find my own peers, find new peers, than necessarily, I guess you can say, people that I grew up going to high school with and things like that. A lot of my partner, it's a year after she graduated in 2010, so we were kind of in the same area and things like that. But tell me your question again. I'm sorry.
That's what you asked.
Were our peers more open?
Yeah, we were peers more open. Yeah.
So yeah, in certain areas, yes.
Okay.
In certain areas, I will say we are able to be more open. I wish my peers that I grew up with, I wish I could say, I guess I wish we had the space together to fully be open together. I feel like in the sense that the peers that I grew up with, we're kind of just living our different lives and we're doing our own thing. I don't know much about their journeys. I know, you know, possibly who they're dating and things like that, but we don't have that journey together. So with peers that I met Georgia and beyond, high school, college, and things like that. Yeah, we're more open, more open-minded to different things, and we're definitely more open with each other. I definitely would do more with them, but it is my hope to have a more open community within the Black community of Roanoke, because, like I said, I know who you are. I know who you are. I believe that we should get together, and I think that it would be, I think it would be healing for all of us, that we need to know the history of here in Roanoke and how we've become who we are as people, and it matters.
Yeah, true. Because we have a lot more to learn.
Yeah, so much to learn.
Yeah, you talk about being in a romantic relationship, so how do you feel about that? Like, how happy are you that we were? Yeah.
I'm happy in my relationship. We are at our 3-year mark. We've had our ups and downs, and especially in Roanoke. We always search for a more open community, more friends, more people to actually hang out with. That's our only downfall of Roanoke, of what we really want of events and things to do, and more LGBTQ couples or inclusive people who would be more open to it, I guess you can say. But yeah, we've been good the last 3 years. Her name is Alexis Amos. We plan to continue to do more events here and create more space in Roanoke for our people, our kind, and to make it a safe space, and to just continue to actually bring the arts and culture into the community that we would desperately move to another place for. We want that here. We want to be able to have that at home. I love other places in Roanoke, but it's nothing like home. I love Roanoke. So yeah, that's where we are. That's where we are.
You feel like your relationship kind of strengthens your poetry voice?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely my poetry voice, even especially with hosting and events and things like that. I am definitely a poet, definitely a creative. My partner is definitely organized, responsible, and things, not that I'm not responsible, but just more level-headed and more task-oriented, I guess you could say. So we definitely balance each other out there, and she never misses an event. She's not heard me spoke, and it was also pretty cool because when we did meet, I had already been doing poetry in front of her for a couple of years, so in a sense I kind of felt like she kind of already knew who I was, even if a little bit through my poetry, so.
So I met through poetry, pretty much.
Yeah, we actually met at Soul Sessions. Well, not at Soul Sessions, but she was an audience member at Soul Sessions. I was a poet at Soul Sessions, and we actually live a block away from each other. Where my grandmother lived, she grew up a block away from my grandmother all her life, so we've always literally almost been a block away from each other. She was working with Macklin Mosley with the neighborhood, and she was doing their background work on some of their events and organization and stuff like that. And we happened to work an event together. We hit it off. We were cool. And I think she messaged me on Facebook one day and asked me if I knew poet Elizabeth Acevedo, and I was just like, yeah, I've heard a couple of her poems. And she was just like, she's going to be at Longwood, and do you want to go? And I was just like, well, yeah, sure. I was like, I don't know where Longwood is. She's like, but yeah, sure, I'll go. And she was like, cool, I'll drive. And I was just like, all right. We drove, and we had great conversation down. We went to go see Elizabeth Acevedo, and after that, we just really became good friends. And I think that was probably like August, September, and then around February, we were talking and we decided that we liked each other a little more than friends, and that we had been hanging out and that we wanted to make it official. So we did that, and it's been 3 years. We love to travel, definitely adventures, anything, live music, street art, good food, sweets. We're there. So if you want to travel with us or anything like that, that's what we do. And if we're at a beach, I want to be there all day. But yeah, that's how we met. So she had been hearing my poetry for a while, and I liked it. I knew that she was into poetry. She had been to open mic events and things like that, and we were kind of really just into different people, but into all of the same things, and we kind of hit it off, and it's working.
That's fantastic. So you say you guys met over, pretty much got into contact over Facebook. So do you believe like social media is kind of like an outlet or pretty much a good tool to use?
Yeah, we didn't have each other's numbers, so it didn't work. We would have probably had to wait to another event that we've seen each other at. Because, we literally didn't have each other's numbers. It was easier than having someone play the middleman and say, hey, can you get somebody's number for me? It worked out, and it was honest, genuine, and I think it plays a role. I think it plays a significant role. I've known a few people who have got into it with each other right over social media. And one of my cousins, they live in Florida now, but they just had their, well, I won't say second child because it's a set of twins.
Wow.
But they had a little boy, and then they had a set of twins, and they met off of a Facebook post, and then they went and, got into the messenger and started talking, and they, I think they were talking for maybe about 6 months, and they decided that they were in love with each other, that they were both heavily in the Christian field and things like that they wanted to get married, and they've been together for about 5-6 years now. And that was just off of 6 months. I think it definitely plays a role. I think that I just, at the Love is Love event, Daniel was telling me that he met his wife in Miami, and they got each other's numbers, and they accidentally messaged each other or something like that, and ended up being on social media, and then actually started talking, and they're married. Social media, I think you definitely could have a few strange people in your inbox, scale those accordingly, look through those, but I think that good things can come from social media. I think good things can come from social media, and at the end of the day, it should be connecting us with different things, different people, organizations, political topics, things that are going on. It connects us. So I believe good things come from social media.
So in general, do you think that just social media is a good way of meeting other people in like your community, like LGBTQ people, like meeting each other, forming relationships, and going off to form like bigger groups?
Yes, I think it's good. I think it's definitely good, and I will say personally, for me, I think that there should definitely be a better social media presence, because I say, for instance, when I do travel, that's who I go to. I go to people who are LGBTQ identifying, who live in certain neighborhoods, and I want to know what they're doing. So those are the neighborhoods I want to know I can go there, because I know it's safe. Like, I know that I can relax. I know it's going to be rainbows and stuff everywhere. And not just, even if it doesn't have it, that's what I look for when I travel, when I'm looking for recommendations, from different art and different arts or museums or things to visit other places. So, I definitely think that social media and the LGBTQ spectrum and just in general around town, social media, I think it'd be good for it. Definitely to connect us, and especially we were wanting to do dinners and things like that. But just to create another hub, another connection somewhere where we can go comment on each other's posts, share each other's pictures, share our own experiences, and next thing you know, you've both been at the same restaurant 5 times in the same row and just get a table together. Like, enjoy yourself. I believe that it plays a great role.
That's good. That's really nice. So, as a poet, do you believe that there are, like, specific terms like you often use that you don't necessarily hear outside of, like, the poetry community?
Me? Terms?
Terms, phrases, lingo, verbiage.
No, not for
really?
Me. No, not for me. I don't have any write-off. I think poets definitely have a certain aesthetic, and I'll say we have a certain aesthetic and just a certain aesthetic. I don't think that verbiage and anything like that. I know personally for me, I will I don't have a particular line right now in my head, but I'll use a line over and over again. So you may hear it in one poem here, you may hear it in one poem here. So when I'm kind of inspired by something, I stick with it till I'm not inspired by it anymore. So it may mean it means three different things in three different poems. That's how I would think of myself. But yeah.
Okay. So final question.
Okay.
So what is your goal and dream as an African American person in the LGBTQ community, mm-hmm. as a poet, mm-hmm. for like, what are your dreams for the world? What do you envision the world being like in your in your mind? What you hope it just to become?
I envision the world being a place where we always have space to reflect, to heal, to love people. And for me personally, I would see it as my dream is, and it started off as a, didn't know this would be the dream then that it is now, but I always dreamed of owning a publishing company. And I want to do a publishing company where we hear from people who are black and brown, not people of color, LGBTQ, queer people, everyone, but also have it kind of in a snug little bookstore, huge international publishing company, things like that, but where we can actually have a snug little bookstore and we can actually do readings and share our experiences right together, because even though we are, everything is global and things like that, it's the intimate moments that matter and that will reach the world. We have internet and everything so far. So I think of that route and still using the publishing company of Rare Press to create those realistic, authentic stories that we truly need mm-hmm. in the world today.
Yeah, we really need stuff like that too.
Mm-hmm. And if we don't write about it, we won't know.
Mm-hmm,
so
exactly.
We have to write our history, and we have to write the real history. Mm-hmm. So I want to help facilitate that and create that platform.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate you sharing everything you've shared with us.
Thank you.
Yeah, because I know that you've really improved the world just by speaking your mind. Tell us your story.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that for having me, for even just inviting me to share my oral history. It's helped me think about so many different things and so much of what I truly still want to learn. So I appreciate you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Good.